From State Street and the First Midwest Bank Studio, this is WMVP Chicago, ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
This is Lekic and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
Lekic and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000 in the ESPN Chicago app. Watch the show on Twitch. You can find the channel ESPN 1000 Chicago. You can watch all of our shows here on ESPN 1000. Yesterday, the San Francisco 49ers rewarded their head coach, Kyle Shanahan, with a new multi-year extension the team announced yesterday. Six-year contract that replaces the 3 years remaining on his deal and now ties Shanahan to the 49ers through 2025, league sources tell ESPN. That makes Shanahan one of the five highest-paid coaches in the National Football League. So we know what he did with the Atlanta Falcons as the offensive coordinator. He goes to the 49ers. Kyle Shanahan, in a short amount of time, has jumped into the pool of conversation when we talk about some of the up-and-coming best head coaches in all of football. And Abdallah, what I wanted to ask you about is, when we look at Kyle Shanahan and the potential there offensively for the 49ers, what he's done with Jimmy Garoppolo, what he did as the offensive coordinator with Matt Ryan and the Falcons, is he a part of that group where we can start to look at top five coaches in the NFL? He's getting paid like it, and I think off the bat, you immediately go to three names. If you said, okay, list off the top five coaches in the NFL, there are three names that I think most of us, if we did a think tank and we kind of pulled our thoughts together, we would come up with Bill Belichick, we would come up with Andy Reid, and we would come up with Sean Payton, right? Those are probably three guys that would make the majority of people's top five list, right? Mm-hmm. Am I right on that?
Yeah, I would say that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So who are the other two? You know, like okay, so I would put Kyle Shanahan
in there.
You think he's a top five coach?
And I would probably put Pete Carroll in there.
Ooh, interesting.
And I would probably put Sean Payton in there.
Big game Pete.
So I would say those guys.
So Pete Carroll hasn't lost any luster for you?
I don't think so.
In the last couple of years? Because I know people in Seattle kind of view Carroll as past his prime.
Well, I think, look.
And Russell Wilson has saved his butt many times in the last 2 years.
I'll tell you this. If the Seahawks ever got rid of Pete Carroll, if I were the Bears, I'd be first in line.
Isn't he the oldest coach in the NFL?
So what? Age is just a number.
No, I know age is just a number, but like Pete Carroll, listen, his prime was at SC. And then he came to the NFL, wins a Super Bowl with those Seahawks right after, right? Mm-hmm. He is the legend of Boom. That team was very good. That team got to Super Bowls. They almost beat the Patriots in that game. If they only would have ran the ball instead of Russell throwing it, who knows what would happen?
I'd probably put Sean Payton in ahead of Pete Carroll, because the way I'm looking at it as I look at it for today's NFL, you know, I'm looking at it as I want offensive guys to be my head coach. So like you said, Andy Reid, Bill Belichick to some extent, you know, like what he's done with Tom Brady, what he's been able to do with quarterbacks when Tom Brady is hurt. A lot of that he's relied, you know, on his offensive coordinators for that. But ultimately, I'm not going to take, like, Bill Belichick's the best coach. Like, Bill Belichick is hands down the best coach. Offensive, defense doesn't matter. You put Bill Belichick in there. But then you look at offensive play callers. You look at Sean Payton. You look at Kyle Shanahan. You look at Sean McVay. And those, to me, those guys are in there. Alan Lamont has a good suggestion as well. And the only reason I didn't include this suggestion, Al, is because he's more of a defensive guy. And if I'm looking to hire a head coach, he's just outside the top five. Al.
Hey, guys. I'm going to have to include Mike Tomlin and Pete Carroll in the top five. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to put Matt Nagy at 29, probably.
Okay, 29. I mean, I'd rather have him.
Maybe like mid-20s.
29? Al, that's funny. Thank you.
But Mike Tomlin is a very good one. But for me, Al, he's just outside that top five because I want an offensive-minded guy, right? He's put together a great defense. The Steelers are always there. I mean, look what he did with Duck Hodges. Like yes, he's a great, great coach. But I want an offensive-minded guy. So he's like, Mike Tomlin is like six.
Yeah, Mike Tomlin with the Steelers. He's been there since 2007, one Super Bowl win. He's won the AFC twice. He has six AFC North championships. He's been to the playoffs eight times. He has a winning percentage of 63. So Mike Tomlin in the conversation, Pete Carroll in the conversation. You know, Al just mentioned Matt Nagy. And one of the things that I look at when I kind of try and figure out who the best coaches in the NFL are, I like to look at gambling, right? Against the spread.
Mm-hmm.
Who are those who get their teams ready to play when the expectations are not in your favor? Who meets expectations? Who exceeds past what you are expected to do in Vegas? Now, I get it. The lines aren't everything in Vegas, and gambling isn't everything when it comes to the NFL. But if you look at those last year who were the best at winning against the spread, Kansas City was number one. They went 13-5-1 against the spread. The Rams, you mentioned Sean McVay. I agree. I think Sean McVay's in that conversation. Second best team in the NFL last year against the spread. The Rams were 10-5-1. The Saints were third, 11-6-0. How about this one? This one's going to be interesting to watch for the next couple of years. Is the hot to trot candidate from the desert, a coach who is going to be one of the best coaches in the NFL. Cliff Kingsbury and the Cardinals were the fourth best team against the spread last season, 9-5-2 against the spread. The Packers were fifth, 11-7. The 49ers, 11-7-1, were six. So that's where you get Kyle Shanahan. And I know the last caller brought up Matt Nagy. So you go through all the teams in the NFL. Where are the Bears? I'm searching. I'm scrolling.
Keep still scrolling
down in the canyon.
That was a nice effect you did there. I like that.
Yeah, I put my hand in front of my mouth and I moved away from the mic.
You did a little like echo, like a self-echo.
Because down in the basement of the National Football League against the spread last season, the Chicago Bears, 4-12 against the spread, the very last team in the NFL. But how about this? I will give you a glimmer of hope, Abdallah. How about this? You say, okay, fine, worst in the NFL last year. Oh, maybe Matt Nagy's not very good. Not so fast, my friend. If you go to two seasons ago, 2018, do you know who the number one team in the NFL against the spread was?
Bears.
2018?
Bears.
Matt Nagy and the Chicago Bears.
Well,
of course, you have to look at multiple years. You have to kind of take everything into consideration because in 2018, it went Chicago, Seattle, New England, Cleveland, Kansas City, Cincinnati. Those were your top six teams. The only teams that are in both, you would have Kansas City. That's the only team that you get in the top six of both against the spread both seasons.
Well, let me look at it this way. Let me break it down even further because I don't really care if you're, as far as like coming into coaching, right? As far as talking about coaching, I don't really care if you cover when you're a favorite, right? You're supposed to win. If you're a favorite, you're supposed to win. That's your job. You're your favorite, you're supposed to win. I look at it as a dog, and if you go last year, they were the third worst team, 2-4 against the spread as a dog. So you're not keeping it close.
No.
Right? You're 2-4 against the spread. You're not keeping it close. Now 2018, they were better. They were like the fifth or sixth ranked team against the spread as a dog. But I look at it as you need to keep it competitive, right? If you need to give your team a chance to win in the fourth quarter. And if the Bears aren't covering the spread as a dog, that's more detrimental than them just not covering the spread in general. Because if they're a favorite, you win. It's fine. I don't, like, to me, look, if I'm gambling on the Bears, ultimately, like, I don't like being mad and losing money, like being happy that they won and mad that I lost money because they didn't win by enough. But if I'm betting them as a dog and they're not even competitive, they're 2-4 against the spread, that I don't know if that's coaching. I don't know if that's bad defense, or it's obviously bad offense. They were one of the worst offenses in the league last year. They had a top 10 defense last year. So it's ultimately Matt Nagy's an offensive coach. He's an offensive play calling. The offense was bad. It falls on the shoulders of Matt Nagy. He is the one to blame for that. Now, you go even further, Trubisky, or, you know, Brian Pace is to blame for drafting Trubisky, all that kind of stuff, that's fine. But ultimately, the coach needs to put you in a better position to win at the end of games, and being 2-4 against the spread as a dog, to me, is more detrimental than their overall record as a dog, or as a against the spread.
So when we look at head coaches, 312-332-3776, we agree on Belichick, we agree on Andy Reid, Sean Payton's in the mix. Some of the other names to be out there for the two other spots, top five coaches in the NFL, we gave you Sean McVay. Is he in your list? Cliff Kingsbury, Kyle Shanahan, Pete Carroll, Mike Tomlin, a name we have yet to mention, John Harbaugh. What he's done with Baltimore has been pretty fantastic since 2008. He's won a Super Bowl. He's won one AFC. He has four AFC North championships and eight playoff berths. So those are some names kind of floating around. How do you fill out the top five coaches in the NFL? Let's go to Jim in Naperville. You're on ESPN 1000.
No, I was about to say, like, nobody mentioned John Harbaugh in this whole conversation.
Why has he been so good?
Because, like, think about it. Like, don't the prognosticators, like, all the analysts, somebody always chooses the Ravens to win the Super Bowl or to get to the playoffs every year. Every year. But they, when do they do that with the Bears?
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a good point, Jim.
Well,
I see your point.
I like
your point. I like your style.
What I like about Harbaugh is his ability to adapt. You know, like with this year, right? He completely changed his offense, completely changed everything. So when you have a coach that can do that, when you have a coach like Bill Belichick, right? I always go back to Belichick and the year that Brady was in and out and he had to win a game with Jacoby Brissett and they didn't know he was going to start till like that week of, you know? And he completely changed his offense and went back to a pro-style offense and or a college-style offense to fit Jacoby Brissett because that's what he was more familiar with and did that in a week. So I always look at the ability. And what John Harbaugh's done with the Ravens and their offense this year, the ability to change it up and cater to your quarterback and you know, he's on the cover of Nancy, he was going to be on the cover of Madden this year and all that. So I feel like that's more of a plus to him. I would still take the other offensive callers better because I want to see him do it over a few years. Like Harbaugh's been obviously been doing it for more than a few years, but I want to see this offense keep up for a couple years before I pick the other offensive minds to be the head coach of my team. So he's John Harbaugh's in the top 10 for sure.
Yeah, I think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah,
right?
But I don't know if he's top 5.
Man, it's tough because it's really only two spots. We all agree on the first three. I think we do. I feel like we're all coming to the same conclusion. All right, you can tweet us your top five coaches in the NFL at Bleck, at Chris Bleck, and at Adam A. Abdallah. Coming up next, we will talk with Russell Dorsey from MLB.com. He will help us try and fix the sport of baseball. It's a large task. We'll talk about it next.
You're listening to Bleck and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
This is Bleck and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
About 30 minutes ago, we were talking about baseball, and Abdallah, you know, the one thing that kind of sticks out in my head when we think about it and we talk about it is, like, we were joking about the 30 for 30 that you and I are going to direct. We are co-directors on this. Baseball owners, they don't like the sport of baseball. That's the documentary. We need a better title. That's a working title. I don't know if that's what we can do.
Wait, hold on. Co-directors?
Yeah, co-directors.
My vision...
Oh,
is,
you have a...
My vision for this film...
I thought we would workshop that, too. Along with the title, we would workshop the vision together.
We have dueling visions.
All right. All right. Can I produce and you'll direct?
Yeah, you can produce. Not executive, though. I need someone.
I just put my title in the credits.
I need someone
that's
real
all
for an executive producer. This is your first rodeo here. I can't have that.
All right, go ahead. What's your vision?
Well, my vision for this film is a bunch of guys who this isn't their main gig. Like, this is their side gig. This is their side hustle. Basically, if driving for Uber or for Uber Eats or for Caviar is your side hustle, that's being an MLB owner. None of these guys, their sole income is from owning a baseball team.
Yeah, so it's like, not their pride and joy of the most important thing to them.
So for most of them, if their side hustle goes away, they'll just find another side hustle. Simple as that.
Well,
and that's why some of them, and eight of them, according to Ken Rosenthal, are just like, nah, I don't need to do this anymore.
And that's what's so frustrating as we talk baseball, and we're going to talk with Russell Dorsey from MLB.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Russ_Dorsey1.
Major League Baseball, the side hustle.
And that's the title we're going to use for the 30 for 30 that
as
we're going to
direct. As director?
That we're going to direct.
No, I'm oh, my God.
Russell, as we bring you into the conversation, are we going to have baseball this summer?
Curious Abdallah, how you guys doing? I would hope that we have baseball. My gut is leaning towards no, but my heart would love to say yes.
What I don't understand is how owners can say that they're better off looking long term, because for these owners, it's long term. It's a long term investment. They buy these baseball teams, you know, like Tom Ricketts bought the baseball team for $900 million. It's now worth $3 billion, according to Forbes, right? They look at it as a long term investment, and they should be smart. If they're not billionaires because they're stupid, they're billionaires because they have foreshadowing and they can look and see if this is going to be a good investment or not. And I don't understand how they could see that if we don't play this year, and we have a collective bargaining agreement that goes into next year, and we may have a delay next year because of a labor strike or whatever, how that's good for their long-term investment.
Right. And I think when you look at the business of baseball over the last 5 years, you know, there was no other year that was more profitable than 2019. You know, baseball made $10.7 billion, or that was at least the reported amount. And that money doesn't just disappear overnight, right? So if you look at this year, nobody expected coronavirus to happen. And with baseball's finances continuing to rise over the last couple of years, if there's a down year, sure, it'll be different. There won't be as much money circulating as there would be in a normal year. However, you have to consider with those other years being able to hold 2020 up a little bit, that you'd be able to get through this and then hopefully bounce back again in 2021. And I think you're right. That's a good point you make about being so close to a CBA. That's something now that we're almost having advanced CBA talks this year. So something that baseball's having trouble with that other sports aren't is they're having basically these semi-CBA type discussions, and then you have to figure out how do you get baseball back in the middle of a pandemic. So it's really difficult to have all these different conversations and then try to keep a focus on the things that are most important.
Russell Dorsey from MLB.com talking with Black and Abdallah with you on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. So let's stick with the CBA that's right around the corner. Which side, the owners or the players, is hurting themselves more this summer dealing with COVID-19 when we finally get to that point when the new CBA is up? Which side is doing more harm this summer than good?
You would have to say ownership, just based on everything we've seen, things that have leaked, and just the public perception that owners don't care about fan bases. And it's not something that we would just say if there wasn't just continued finger pointing on both sides. I do think both sides have issues, but I think when it comes to public perception, which honestly is the most important thing when it comes to the people that spend money at the gate and were a big part of that $10.7 billion that was made in 2019. You know, fans, I think for the first time in a while, like in 94, fans blame players for the strike that happened. This time around, I think people understand what's going on. I think fans, as we all know, continue to get smarter as the years go on. And I think fans can kind of see through the noise on this one. And I think, especially with players coming out right away today, a lot of the players tweeting when and where we're ready to play, including Mike Trout, the league's best player, who is usually, you know, kind of in the background, just, you know, does his thing on the field. But when that guy, when the LeBron James of your sport comes out and states his opinion, that means a lot, especially for, you know, the other guys in the league to fall in line. So I think ownership is really going to have to take a look in the mirror here to get baseball back, and not only this year, but when that CBA is up in 2021.
When you look at the deal that Major League Baseball signed with Turner that was put out this week, probably that the owners didn't want to be put out this week, that they signed for $450 million for the next eight years. My question is, would baseball be better off once they go to these CBA negotiations? Would they be better off, and I don't think it'll happen because I don't think the owners will actually want to show their books, would they be better having an NBA type of setup where there's revenue sharings, there's a cap, there's a ceiling on the, there's also a floor, so baseball teams have to spend a certain amount, so there's not as much tanking. There still can be tanking because there's obviously still tanking in the NBA, but would baseball be better off if that were the case and you couldn't sign Bryce Harper for 10 years and $300 or $400 million or whatever it is?
That's actually an interesting question about it, because I think when you look at the pros and cons of each of those different things, I think you can find really good parts about that and really bad parts about it. I think the thing about that idea that I like is the salary floor, where there's a certain level, let's say, just throwing up a number for grins and giggles, $75 million is the floor. So every team has to spend at least $75 million for every year. However, if you do that, then you would have to install a salary cap, which I don't think is necessarily the best thing. I do think it's one of the good parts about baseball, because I think if you have a team and you're willing to put money into your franchise, you shouldn't, it shouldn't be a negative that you want to spend money. And as we've seen in the last couple of years, I think we should give credit is due to the ownership groups that look to spend money and put a winning product on the field. So I think if we could come up with some way to find a couple of different things out of those and come up with the best plan out of that, I think that would be great. As far as the revenue portion, I'm like you. I would, until I see it, a deal done where owners and to say, hey, here are the books, wide open, do what you will, I don't believe it'll ever happen.
Russell Dorsey from MLB.com talking baseball with Black and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000. You know, if we look at a 50-game or so season, how do you think that that's actually going to play out? I'm actually very interested in that because I think it'll be fun. I think it'll be just like an extended playoffs. How do you think that will actually play out on the field?
Personally, I'm against it just because I think baseball is the one sport that plays true over the full 162 games. Like, the good teams are going to be good most of the time after 162. The bad teams are going to be bad after 162. And then you'll have some surprises here and there. But for the most part, it plays like it's supposed to or how we expect it to. I think with 50 games, you're less likely to see, you know, the example that people like to use is the Washington Nationals, right? They were 19-31 after 50 games last year. And so that team that was such a great story and ended up winning the World Series would not have even been close to sniffing the playoffs this year in that format. Does it spark some interest? Sure. I think there's always going to be interest, especially this year where we're just dying to watch something that's not on at 4 in the morning. But I do think it's going to be interesting because I think for a team like the Cubs, who have been for the last 4 years on this, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint, and have gotten off to some bad starts over the last couple of years, a team like that won't be able to rely on that narrative. So you're going to have to come out the gate really fast, and each game is going to have huge importance. So in that aspect, you're right. It is kind of like a playoff atmosphere.
Who does the shortened season favor more? I'm not going to ask Cubs or White Sox, but I would say a team with more veteran players, veteran pitching like the Cubs, or a younger team like the White Sox.
So why did you just ask Cubs or White Sox?
Well, because, I mean, it doesn't have to be.
I'm not going to ask Cubs or White Sox. I'm not going to say Cubs or White Sox, but ask Cubs or White Sox.
Because there are a lot of teams that have veteran players and veteran pitchers. There's a lot of teams that have young players. Why you got to crap on my question like that?
I don't know. It's fine.
I thought it was a good question.
I liked it.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I think you could find a case for both, but personally, I do think it would kind of lean towards the younger teams just because a younger team is less likely to try to pace themselves. I think over 162 games, it's a lot easier for a veteran team that has guys who have played in the postseason before to pace themselves over the 7-8 months of baseball. But in a 50-game season or 48-game season where it's maybe 2 months and you know exactly who you're playing, and you know what the finish line is, and basically the number that you probably need to get to reach the postseason, I think a younger team might have an advantage there because they're just going to go all out. They're not going to think about anything else other than we're going to win today. 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 And I think that mindset in this specific set of circumstances is valuable.
You know, I've been asking everyone that's been on the show tonight, when baseball is or was at its best, what was your favorite part about the sport? So, Russell, when you think about baseball, when baseball is at its best, what comes to mind to you?
It's relaxing, man. And I say that as somebody who wasn't always a reporter, right? When I used to come home from school and I used to turn on games and just have it on in the background, whether it was a team that I would be rooting for at the time or not, like, I just love the game. And the fact that there is a generation of younger fans who don't have that right now, and instead they're watching, you know, this fight between players and ownership groups, it's sad. Because summertime, we're in the middle of summer, and this is supposed to be when, like, baseball is at its best. It's light at 7:30, and just a great time to be a baseball fan, and we don't have that. So I do think it's when baseball is at its best, it's relaxing.
Thank you, Russell. We appreciate it.
My guys, appreciate it.
Russell Dorsey from MLB.com. Follow him on Twitter, Russ_Dorsey1. I'm Chris Black with Adam Abdallah here on ESPN 1000. We get a chance in the fall to host the college football show here on ESPN 1000 with Jonathan Hood. The show is called Chicago's College Tailgate. We will talk about Mike Gundy from Oklahoma State. Should he be fired? That's next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
I'd like you to meet someone who's really special.
It's Black and Abdallah.
A real inspiration.
Follow us on the gram at Black and Abdallah and at ESPN _ Chicago.
Okay, cancel culture. Are we canceling Mike Gundy? Is that what the world is doing today? Is that up next? Abdallah, your thoughts. Are you canceling Mike Gundy? Okay, so this is why we're talking about it. 312-332-3776. Black and Abdallah with you here on ESPN 1000. We get a chance to host the college football show, Chicago's College Tailgate with Jonathan Hood here on ESPN 1000 in the falls. And in fact, you can hear Jonathan Hood tonight. Usually he's on right now for Under the Hood, but tonight he's on with Freddie Coleman from 8 to 10 here on ESPN 1000. Check him out. Listen to him last night. Good stuff between Freddie Coleman and Jonathan Hood on ESPN Radio. So during the fall, we talk a lot of college football. Mm-hmm. So this is a story that I feel like we should talk about because we cover college football for the station. And one of the things that kind of has started to come up, not only just this week, but many times in the last, you know, year, is that Mike Gundy says stuff and does stuff that are not necessarily PC. And a lot of times they're not based in fact. And it's something that he has now shown multiple times. Thus, you get the response where when he says or does something, should he be fired? Should he be canceled? And that's where we have it with the head coach of the football program at Oklahoma State, a team that has talent from time to time, but really has never won at the level that they've expected. So I ask you, should we be canceling Mike Gundy?
Man, I don't like canceling people.
Well, and then, okay, so I will let you finish. But the reason I set it up that way is because I agree with you. I mean, listen, go ahead. I'll let you handle it.
I don't like canceling people. But there's has been a problem with Mike Gundy and the way he says things, or what he says, really, right? And I think that the video that was originally posted yesterday with him and Chuba Hubbard and him not apologizing and Chuba being the one apologizing,
which was so bizarre,
which was so weird. He's like, "I'm sorry," and I didn't. And then they did the Predator zap at the end where, you know, like it's the okay, Racial tensions are fixed, Dap. Right? And
I'm so glad that Chuba was able to be here for this video. You know what else was weird about the video between the two was how after Gundy finished his little statement, he then did the and you got something to say.
And then today's apology.
What kind of in cue is that?
I was waiting for him to blink twice if he's being held against his will.
Do you want to hear that?
Sure, yes. Please play it for context.
Here is Mike Gundy today clearly reading off of a prompter, apologizing. And let's backtrack. In case you don't know, this is why he's apologizing. He was seen on Facebook or Twitter from a kid named Kyle Boone, tweeted out a screenshot from a Facebook post. Is that the best way to describe it? A screenshot from a Facebook post.
It was on the internet.
Where Mike Gundy is in a t-shirt, and the t-shirt is for OAN, the OAN Network. Hmm. Now, if you're not familiar with what the OAN Network is, I'm going to read this straight from ESPN.com. Confirm for me that this is from the news editors at ESPN.com.
Yes.
Those on Twitch watching, you can confirm as well. This is from ESPN.com. The news sources at ESPN.com. This is the paragraph in the column from ESPN.com. OAN, One American News, is a far-right news network that is often cited by President Donald Trump. The network, which has a fraction of the audience of Fox News, has tried to position itself as a place for a pro-Trump audience that believes what conservative news outlets have become too mainstream in their reporting. That's not Chris Bleck's opinion. Mm-mm. That is straight from the ESPN
they can see it,
news
I can see
desk.
It. Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Okay,
uh-huh.
In Bristol, Connecticut, as a news entity, that's the way they describe the OAN, One America News Network. And Mike Gundy was fishing wearing this t-shirt. And Chuba Hubbard tweeted that out, his comments. And then the both of them apologized yesterday. Mike Gundy.
Well, No.
More details.
That's not what happened.
Okay.
Mike Gundy appeared in a video.
Okay.
Where Chuba, he looked Chuba remorseful. Apologized. And Chuba apologized for his tweet.
And Mike Gundy said some words, but it wasn't an apology.
He didn't. And no point said, I'm sorry.
Okay. So today, because there was backlash, because there wasn't an apology in the apology video, Mike Gundy on teleprompter giving an apology. Here is Mike Gundy.
I had a great meeting with our team today. Our players expressed their feelings as individuals and as team members. They helped me see through their eyes how the t-shirt affected their hearts. Once I learned how that network felt about Black Lives Matter, I was disgusted and knew it was completely unacceptable to me. I want to apologize to all members of our team, former players, and their families for the pain and discomfort that has been caused over the last 2 days. Black lives matter to me. Our players matter to me. These meetings with our team have been eye-opening and will result in positive changes for Oklahoma State football. I sincerely hope the Oklahoma State family, near and far, will accept my humble apology as we move forward.
Okay, so the fallout, and there's an apology from Mike Gundy. Now do we cancel Mike Gundy? Do you want to hear Paul Feinbaum suggesting on Get Up this morning that Mike Gundy should be canceled?
Look,
here's Paul Feinbaum, mouth of the South, college football maven. Paul Feinbaum on Get Up.
What I can understand is why Mike Gundy has been allowed to continue to coach at Oklahoma State. This is not his first rodeo. This is not the first time he has embarrassed, if not humiliated, that university. And I think the sooner that Oklahoma State gets rid of Mike Gundy, the better it's going to be for that school, and especially the players who go out there every Saturday and give their blood, sweat, and tears for that university.
So there you go, Paul Feinbaum on Get Up earlier today.
I'm not going to say whether or not he should be canceled, because I think that he probably should have been fired before this. I'm not going to cancel him. There's a difference between fired and canceled, right? If another school wants to hire him and deal with him and deal with, that's fine. But Mike Gundy should have been fired a long time ago, right? Mike Gundy, to me, is a guy that has not learned from his mistakes. Mike Gundy, to me, is a guy that can't read the room, as Tom Waddle said to me earlier today. I don't want to steal his phrase. Can't read the room.
Credit it.
Read the room.
Throw some credit Waddle's way.
Read the room.
Throw it that way.
You are a head football coach at a major college in a major conference, right? You wouldn't see, like Nick, I'll use Nick Saban as an example. Nick Saban is always wearing Alabama stuff.
Right.
Right? Unless he's doing an Affleck commercial and then he's got to wear a suit because he can't wear the, but he's still got the rings on, right? You have to be aware. Do you think LeBron isn't conscious of what he's wearing all the time? Like, it's you represent, not only does LeBron represent the Lakers, but he represents himself. Mike Gundy represents the University of Oklahoma State, right? Oklahoma State University, whatever, yeah. Right? He needs to be a representative of that. And I don't care if he was wearing an OAN shirt or if he was wearing whatever. The point is that if you are the representative of that university, and a lot of times the football coach is the highest paid guy at that university.
University, how about the state?
Well, look, Nick Saban is.
I would guess that Mike Gundy is pretty close to the highest paid public official or public employee in the state of Oklahoma. It's probably him and Lincoln Riley. Those are probably the top two, right?
And if Mike Gundy has those thoughts that the OAN network has, that's on him. It's free country. But ultimately, you can't, as a representative of the university, and you get paid handsomely to be a representative of that university 24/7. There are no off days when you're a head football coach at a college. You don't get to, you know, they're constantly out recruiting. They're constantly out. You're constantly a representative of that university, especially in social media. You have to know what you're doing. You have to be conscious of what you're wearing and who you're wearing it in front of and who's going to see that. And it was great for Chuba to say, look, we've seen it in this last week that college football athletes are using their voice. They're using the transfer portals when they don't want to stay at a school, and they're mm-hmm. using their voice to change things at college, change the names of buildings, to bring down statues on campus, to change a lot of things. You know, you saw it at Clemson earlier this week, or earlier last week, with Dabo wearing the Football Matters shirt. He might have been wearing that shirt for 4 years, and that's his slogan. His slogan is football matters, football matters, football matters. I get that. But with what's going on, you have to be aware that you are going to be criticized for wearing that shirt in the context of Black Lives Matter being at the forefront of the conversation.
At the very least, you have to question the intelligence level of these individuals.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, if you want to play dumb, Mike Gundy, mm-hmm. and claim that it's just a shirt you put on, when, like, I've never watched the channel, but I'm aware of the type of broadcast that they put on, which is against Black Lives. Therefore, I'm aware of what they do. Mm-hmm. And if you are that coach, you have to be smarter than that. So at the very least, you're just an idiot, right?
Yeah.
Like, to wear that shirt now. See what I'm saying? And what's even worse than that is if you enjoy that programming, then yeah, that's a severe problem. But like the Dabo Swinney thing, I can understand if it's like, I always wear this shirt. It's what our slogan is for our football coaches committee. I get that. But you have to question the intelligence if you're wearing that shirt last week after George Floyd was murdered in the street.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what's disappointing from people like Gundy, like Dabo, who we watch college football. We love college football. And we're not just going to ignore the stories that are taking place that involve the sport that we enjoy, because it's insane to me that he would wear this shirt and then not immediately say, you know what? It was a lapse in judgment. I should not have been wearing that shirt because I understand what it means. And that's not what I want to portray. Not this little video and Chuba. You should apologize. You pointed it out on. It's just not right.
And, you know, I've been talking about Dabo for a few years, and it's not just because he beat Alabama. I don't like his views on paying college athletes, his views on certain, you know, the transfer for portal, and just basically his views as the college football coach needs to be in charge of everything and control everything.
He only likes things if it benefits him.
Absolutely. And, you know, and look, Saban's somewhat the same, where he doesn't like the transfer portal and because it's not beneficial to him, but that's fine. I understand that. But as far as your students having a voice, your students, you know, being able to go out and make money if they want to now that it's okay, like Dabo has said he would quit if they allow student athletes to get paid. All right, well, there's the door. You're like, yeah, you made Clemson what it is. Cool, good for you. But you have to give back now. You have to be tolerant. You have to be cognizant of what is going on. You have to be aware. You can't just be in your football.
Did I just hear that Dabo Swinney is available? As a USC fan, my ears perked up.
You go ahead and you take him. Go right ahead.
You know what? To be honest, I don't think that's
go right ahead.
That I almost swore there. I don't think that stuff's going to fly on the West Coast. No offense. I don't think that's going to work.
No.
His style. I don't think that's going to happen.
And people have always said that, oh, well, when Saban retires, Dabo can come right in. Don't want him. Don't want him.
So Mike Gundy has been the head coach at Oklahoma State since 2005. He is 129-64. That's his win-loss record. He lost the Texas Bowl last year. His last bowl win was the Liberty Bowl in 2018. He's been to a couple of New Year's Day Six Bowls, Fiesta, Sugar, Cotton Bowls as well, but really Oklahoma State has never been winning at a merit or at a clip that you would suggest that this guy just can get away with whatever he wants. At the very least, you know, I don't think he should be canceled. I think you said, well, he should just be maybe someone else's problem to deal with. And to be honest, if he doesn't win more than 8 games this season, he'll probably be fired, and maybe Oklahoma State will be better off for it.
Well, what sucks about college football is that he's probably going to make upwards of $3 million if he gets fired in the buyout.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, that's what happens. We will take your calls on this at 312-332-3776. And also coming up, two teams in the NBA that if they win the championship this year, we're all going to point to it as a fluke. I'll tell you who those two teams are next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
This is Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
SI.com, Abdallah, I saw this earlier today. Chris Mannix has a new piece out, how everything is falling into place for the 76ers to shock the world when the NBA season resumes, and it will resume soon. Do the 76ers have what it takes to win the NBA title? There are two teams in the NBA that, at the end of the day, if they win the title, we're all going to point to it and say it was a fluke, asterisk, COVID-19 title, and we won't give them full respect. Those two teams, the team that was just referenced, the 76ers. If the 76ers win the title, we're all going to say, it's a bit fluky. The other team, America's team to hate on because of the way they play and their GM and everything that they're about, and holding the basketball 45 feet away from the basket and with one guy touching it all the time, pardon the expression, Jonathan Hood coming up next. The Houston Rockets.
I don't think the Houston Rockets will be a fluke.
If the Rockets win the title, everyone will say, if it's the Rockets and the 76ers, if they win, no. Listen, I get it. If it's someone like an 8 seed, yeah, of course. That's an obvious take.
The Rockets are always there.
If it's an 8 seed, obvious take that that's going to be a fluke. If it's the 76ers and the Rockets, everyone's going to point to COVID-19, shortened season, everything was disrupted. Fluky, weird Orlando bubble situation.
The Rockets are always there.
People will discredit. If the 76ers and the Rockets win it, they'll discredit.
First of all,
the acceptable teams are the Bucks, the Raptors, the Clippers, the Lakers.
Say it again for me. The Rockets are always there.
No, I know they are.
Okay, so why would it be fluky?
People think it's fluky that they even get to the conference finals.
Anybody that wins it this year is going to be a fluke. They've had months off.
No. If LeBron wins it, the story's going to be about how he got through the pandemic and he added to the titles to chase Michael Jordan.
No, it's not.
Yes, and this the mental not, fatigue of being on the campus for 80 days in a row.
The only way I'm
He was
putting,
at Disney World for 80 days.
The only way I'm putting an asterisk on this title is if LeBron wins it, because Michael never got 4 months off between the end of the regular season and the start of the postseason.
Like, if the Clip Show wins the title, right? Like, we're all going to say, oh, yeah, they probably would have won it anyway. The Clippers probably would have won to begin with. If the Bucks win, oh, well, they're the best team in the league this year. Sure, they won the title. If the Raptors win, we'll say, wow, look at this franchise. Kawhi leaves, and they're still good enough to be back-to-back champs. No fluke. People won't say that. People will only say it's a fluke if it's the 76ers and their weird mix between Simmons and Embiid and a bunch of players around them that don't quite fit, mm-hmm. and the Houston Rockets with their style of play. That's what it is, those two teams.
Their style of play.
I'm just telling you. It's what it is.
I've been
moving for the last 2 days, so I don't know. That's the best I came up with for you.
I think that if any team wins it besides, the like you said, the Lakers, the Clippers.
Lakers, Clippers, Bucks.
The Bucks, Raptors. Everyone's going to say
Celtics,
it's a fluke.
That's not the Celtics win. That's not fluky. How is that fluky? Solid team. Good coach. Kemba Walker. On the big stage. Rockets, 76ers.
Not the Rockets and the 76ers. The Rockets are always in the playoffs. The Rockets are all like, they always have a chance. People always talk about how, oh, it's the Rockets here. It's the Rockets here. This year is going to be the Rockets here.
You want to do this tomorrow night?
Do what?
The show?
Yeah, I'll be here.
All right. We'll be here back tomorrow night. Coming up next, Jonathan Hood and Frey Coleman on ESPN 1000.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.